Of all the people they had met on Bakura so far, Senior Senator Belden seemed most sympathetic to the Alliance. Perhaps he could help Luke find sanctuary. Luke took a speeder and drove it out the spaceport's perimeter road. 5 minutes later, he parked atop a residential tower. He found Senator Belden's apartment near the turbo lift. He ran a hand over his hair and straightened his gray shipsuit, then touched the alarm panel. The door slid aside. He stepped back. Garyo, here too? Hello, I was hoping to speak with Senator Belden. He's out. A cracked voice behind her called,
Let him in, Gary, let him in.
That's Madame Belden, and she's not well. Garyo touched her forehead. Come in for a moment. Cliss, her caregiver, had a family crisis, so I'm sitting with her this morning. In the living room, a wizened woman sat propped up on cushions in a brocade chair with wing-shaped armrests.
You're back, Ravidin. Why did you stay away so long?
Luke shot Gary a puzzled glance. She thinks you're their son. He was killed in the purges 3 years ago. She thinks every young man is their son. Don't argue. It's better. Hesitantly, Luke took Madame Belden's hand. I'm sorry. So much work to do for the rebellion, you know. She squeezed his hand.
I knew you were working undercover somewhere, Ravidin.
Then she shook her head helplessly.
I'm...
She shut her eyes and set her chin. Gariel shrugged. You're fine, Epi. Would a nap feel good?
Nap.
How long has she been like this? 3 years. Gary shook her head sadly. Unfortunately, she was deeply involved in resistance to the Empire. She broke down when Ravidin died. It destroyed her. Madame Belden thrashed in her chair.
Don't leave without saying goodbye.
Luke knelt beside her. He cleansed his mind of concern and desires and focused inward, examining her deep presence. It pulsed too powerfully for someone who needed full-time care. The mind remained, affecting the force, creating a life pulse so strong that Luke guessed she had untrained strength of her own. But some of the links connecting mind to senses had been severed. The Empire did this, he guessed. He blinked up into sad, watery eyes. Gariel was watching him from behind. If he used the Force, she might throw him out, or she might begin to respect his abilities. Regardless of what Gariel wanted, Epi Belden needed healing. Luke stroked the spotted, bony hand. I want to show you something. If you can do this, you may be able to heal yourself. Her sense brightened and became eager. No, no. Be calm and still. Listen deep. He pressed into her awareness and showed her how he had healed himself traveling in hyperspace. Then he turned her focus inward. Something has been damaged, he told her. I think the Empire did it. Find it. Heal it. Fight back, Epi. May the Force be with you. A wave of her gratitude washed him out of her mind. What did you do? Gariel demanded.
Well, I know a little about self-healing. I showed her something she might try, that's all.
Is that so little for you? She asked bitterly.
A non-Jedi couldn't do that much. I did nothing to her. My word is as an honorable man.
She shrugged, dismissing the matter. Come out here. Sit down. She strode through a door arch into a white-tiled dining room. She motioned him to a seat at a transparent table.
If you can do so much with the Force, why don't you simply get into a fighter, blast your way onto the Saruvi flagship, and get rid of them?
I might try it if you told me to. Luke sighed away the impulse and explained,
If I used my powers in anger or aggression instead of for knowledge and defense, the dark side would take me. It took...
He strangled a terrible temptation. Someday he must admit his ancestry. He almost wished he had it over with, but the proper time hadn't yet arrived. Telling Gariel would be disastrous.
It took many Jedi. They became agents of evil and had to be hunted down.
I should have guessed. Gariel looked him up and down, then cocked an ear toward the open door. He might yet win her through Epi.
If she tries what I showed her, she might seem to sleep for, days.
That might be a blessing. What did you need to talk with Orne about? He glanced out a broad window. The morning sun was turning brilliant, but he felt chilly. He'd been warned. Somewhere out there, the Saruk would soon be looking for him. He needed help. But being here, he was endangering Gariel and Madame Belden. He stood up. I hope Madame Belden improves. What I sensed underneath her troubles, I think I would have liked her. She was a fighter, wasn't she?
Gariel's left eyebrow arched. Great. He'd reminded her of his Jedi abilities again.
Luke, thank you for trying. Luke. She finally used my name.
He hurried back to the roof port with a lighter heart.
I am fluent in over 6 million forms of communication, sir.
Leia had heard that sentence so many times she'd forgotten how impressive it was. Prime Minister Capterson's sudden interest reminded her. Now Capterson touched a panel on his desktop console.
Zilpha, key in those ship-to-ship recordings we picked up from the Fluties.
A light changed color beside Capterson's elbow.
Here we go. Have your droid listen to this.
You can talk to him directly, Leia put in. His full designation is C-3PO, and he answers to 3PO.
All right, said Capterson. Listen, 3PO. Tell me what they're saying.
The Flutie played a very large instrument. 3PO's head cocked. He shook it.
I'm sorry, Prime Minister, but I can make nothing of it. It is entirely outside my comprehension.
Han, sitting next to Leia, rubbed his chin. Leia couldn't think of what to say. From behind her came a whistling echo. Leia spun around. R2 stood in a corner, warbling what seemed to be a perfect imitation of Prime Minister Capterson's recording.
3PO, isn't that exactly how the Saruk sounded?
No. He missed one note by a full 4 vibrations. Oh, soak your own transistors. I won't stand for that language.
Capterson raised a white eyebrow.
He can duplicate them that closely?
I wouldn't doubt R2, though it never occurred to me that he'd be able to do that.
Sir, I'm certain that given enough time and recordings, 3PO can make a solid effort at decoding that language.
If he can, we've got a native speaker if we need one. Take your metal friends to my aide's office. Zilpha will set them up with enough recordings to keep them busy well into tomorrow night.
Governor Wylek Nereus bit the end off a twist of Namana candy and chewed thoughtfully. In this cool greenway, lined with tall fern trees and passion bud vines, he could momentarily ignore the menace surrounding Bakura and ponder his own career. With both Palpatine and Vader dead, the Rebel Alliance, down-talked so disdainfully on all official communiques, became rather more of a threat. Still, all odds favored the Empire, and he had 2 high Rebel leaders within striking distance. He could weaken the alliance substantially. Then he must watch for a new emperor to emerge, flatter and praise him, and meanwhile make Bakura a shining example of pacified, profitable enterprise. If the Saruk didn't take it away, he despised them on principle. As a youth, he pursued 2 hobbies, alien parasitology and alien dentition. The Empire had quietly used both talents. Aliens were creatures to dissect. Or fight, not to ally with.
Sir,
an aide came up and saluted.
You have a personal message waiting on Hollow from the Saruk fleet.
On the Holonet reception pad in Nereus's broad-windowed office, a green light blinked. A meter-high translucent figure appeared over the reception grid, human in striped white robes.
Governor Nereus.
The figure bowed at its waist.
Perhaps you remember me. I'm...
Deb Sivwara,
Nereus growled. Now that was an alien parasite.
I know you as well as I want to. What joyful news do you have this time?
Sivwara shook his head. Less joyful than before, I fear, but perhaps in the short run it will please you better. The mighty Saruk, seeing your hesitancy to join the Imperium's quest for galactic unity, to experience freedom from physical limitations...
Nereus snatched a long ivory Luelkan tooth off a pile of flimsies.
Make your point.
Sibwara extended one palm.
Admiral Ifpikis is willing to move our fleet out of your system, if you'll grant us one boon.
Keep talking.
Nereus fingered the tooth's slashing edge. If the hollow had been flesh, he could have sliced it just so. Among the new visitors in your system is a man named Skywalker. If you can hand him over to a special Suruvi delegation, we will leave immediately. Luke poked several buttons but couldn't work the apparatus that scrutinized callers at his quarters. He hustled through the common room and answered the door. Gariel carried a tightly woven string satchel against her blue skirt, and, as before, her very presence made his force sense tingle. "Commander, may I speak with you for a few moments?" Luke backed away from the inquisitive glances of the Imperial guards who had been stationed at the apartment. "Please." Once the door shut, she cupped her hands around her mouth and whispered,
"You're monitored. We're about to disappear."
She lifted the satchel and held it open. Inside was a gray box. She toggled a large switch.
"Disruption bubble generator. I can't leave it on for more than a few seconds at once. You're in danger. A friend in Governor Nereus's office tells me that the governor has been approached by the Siruk."
She slid her hand back into the satchel. "Is your party comfortable here, Commander?" He had to think quickly.
Situation's a little awkward. I have an allergic reaction to stormtrooper armor."
"Good," she mouthed. She twisted her wrist again. "Naturally, Nereus is tempted?"
"I don't think so. He's not stupid. If they want you alive, he's going to make sure they don't get you that way." She glanced down and moved her hand again.
The accommodations are excellent, though."
Luke motioned toward a corner lounge.
"I've been on my feet all day. Please, sit down so I can."
"I don't think I should." He overlaid his voice with a calming veneer of force overtones.
"I wish you would trust me."
"I suppose my reaction to Jedi is like yours to stormtroopers." She worked the generator again. "They wouldn't come after you the way they'd grab one of us plain folks, you know. Neither will Governor Nereus. Watch your back. Watch what you eat and drink and breathe." She started pacing the room, then glanced over at him.
"Are you listening to me think?"
Her string bag lay on the repulsor lounge.
"I can't do that," he said carefully.
"Some of your feelings come through the Force, but that's all."
"That's still not fair. I can't tell what you're feeling."
Luke slid out the gray box and found the control.
"Would you like to know what I'm feeling?"
"Yes."
He drew a deep breath. Honesty was one thing, stupidity another. He wished he had Leia's gift for turning a phrase.
"I already know you on a deeper level than anyone else does. Of course, that makes it worse, because all you know about me is what you think you believe."
"Had he said that right?"
He plowed on.
"Your feelings are strong for me, strongly ambivalent."
She sat in a lounge pit.
"You'd better turn that back off for a few seconds, or we'll both be in trouble."
Quickly, he switched the field off.
"How long have you been a senator?"
Surely that could be considered casual conversation.
"The Senate elected me 5 years ago. I've been in school ever since, either here or off-planet at Imperial Center." "Does it always rain this much? I was raised on a desert world."
After a few more non-committal comments on the weather, the door chimed. Gary sprang up and opened it, grateful for the distraction. One of her personal staff pushed a hover cart through the door. Gary motioned for the staffer to park it between their chairs. Once he had gone, she uncovered the single plate.
"I hope you like seafood. It smells very fresh. If you don't mind, I'll join you."
She took a few delicate bites. Then he ate the rest like a starving man. Luke turned the generator back on.
"The Siruk are out there."
He gestured with his fork.
"Once I settle with them, I'll come back to talk with you, Gariel. If there's any hope that you'd reconsider about me, about Jedi..."
"Think of it this way," he murmured, scraping the last morsel off his plate. "There will always be people who are strong for evil. If the only way to protect others is for a few of us to become strong in the Force for good, isn't that important?" Almost persuaded, she resisted his seeming genuineness. "The cosmos must balance."
"I agree. The dark side calls constantly for aggression, revenge, betrayal. The stronger you become, the more you're tempted."
He glanced down at the generator and raised an eyebrow. It wasn't on too long. We could easily have been eating in silence. She reached into the satchel, twisted her wrist, then slipped the bag over one shoulder. We will work together against the Siruk. He made a hand-twisting motion. She switched on the generator one last time. Is there a chance I could buy a few of those? She shook her head. This is Epi's. There are only a few of them left on Bakura, property of the original families. We've kept them secret from Governor Nereus. Dev stroked the sleek new entechment chair. Or should he call this something else? This one was special. More of an upright bed than a chair, it reclined from 0 to 30 degrees. Instead of a catchment arc, it had inbuilt energy-attracting circuitry that would lie under Skywalker's back. Larger restraints stood open along its sides and near its foot, and other medical attachments ensured the long-term survival of an occupant. All silver and black, it glistened under brilliant cabin lights.
It's beautiful, Master Fear Wurung.
I'm sorry, Dev.
Fear Wurung sang low.
I know this will hurt your feelings.
I wish it were real, Master, but I know you need to test it.
Let's begin.
Fear Wurung nodded his huge, V-crested head. Cautiously, Dev backed up to it. His left foot brushed an open binder. It snapped shut around his ankle.
It works.
After he was strapped in, Fear Wurung touched a red panel. Something stung the small of Dev's back.
That works, too.
That mechanism was critical for long-term confinement, as was the upper spine beamer. Now the procedure would not depend on disabling Skywalker's nervous system first.
Can you move your feet?
Dev peered down. The angle of tilt held them off the gray deck tiles.
I can't even feel them.
Bluescale and Admiral Ifpicus strode in, followed by two Poeks, who dragged a limp human prisoner by his head and arms. That was the one who'd actually be intact.
A review for me,
demanded the Admiral.
How will this differ from standard entechment?
Fear Wurung pressed foreclaws together in front of his chest.
We believe that a force-talented individual will be able to draw energy from a distance, a short distance in Dev's case. If Dev is properly linked to catchment circuitry, the other subject's energies will flow through him, but Dev will remain unintact and will be able to repeat the procedure indefinitely. Not like the chair, then?
If Pickus glanced at it.
No, the actual subject need not be caught. In Skywalker's case, the subject will not even need to be within the range of a tractor beam, or so we hope.
But for convenience sake, we have caught and prepared this one. Is everything ready?
Bluescale asked.
It is.
Fear Wurung pulled the main switch, and the servo pumps injected not simple Magsol, but a solution of Magsol and other factors. It should orient the entire nervous system toward the bed's inbuilt catchment circuit.
I feel, Dev said, as if every nerve in my body were being tugged toward the focus point. It hurts a little.
Fear Wurung turned his right eye toward Dev.
Are you ready to try funneling this human's energies into a battle droid?
I'll try.
The next best thing to entechment might be granting that gift to someone else. Dev shut his eyes and reached down past the discomfort for his center of control. Deeply and humbly aware of his limitations, he flailed through the force toward the other human presence. It seemed like forever before he touched and embraced it. Letting the catchment pull through him, he used the force to suck its energy into himself. For an instant, he felt huge and heavy. Twice as much pain pulsated in his nerves. Then the extra weight vanished. Panting, he opened his eyes wide. The prisoner lay limp on the deck. Governor Wylock Nereus marched into the operations room of his suite, firmly controlling a sense of anticipation. At the short black conference table standing across from Commander Thanos and beside the smuggler Solo, he found Commander Luke Skywalker, Jedi Knight, self-assured in his invulnerability.
Is everything going well, gentlemen?
Nereus took the repulsor chair at the table's head and waved his bodyguards back. The others sat down.
Our fighters are repaired, said Thanos. The crews stand ready for our signal.
That attack would not come if the Sirukh kept their word. Not that Nereus expected them to. If they took Skywalker and attacked anyway, he and Commander Thanos had brought onto line a new weapon that should take a heavy toll on battle droids.
What about that new ship-mounted, temp gun? It disables droids at some distance using electromagnetic pulse, Thanos explained. We've installed two prototype super demps on system patrol craft, but they're untested.
Solo immediately requested demp guns for rebel gunboats. Nereus stroked his chin and let Commander Thanos explain that no others existed. A holographic projector whirred up to table level, creating an image mid-table between Skywalker and Thanos. Surrounding a pale blue sphere, silver and gold ship dots mapped out Bakura's defensive web. Farther out, the red Sirukh glimmered. After they had discussed possible maneuvers for 2 hours, Skywalker folded his hands on the table. I think we can confirm it. Alliance forces will spearhead each thrust.
Destroy one cruiser and we might change their minds. Destroy two?
He trailed off.
Well, we'll see what they actually throw at us.
One more question, Skywalker addressed Commander Thanos. If the Sirukh go on waiting for us, how long do we keep them waiting? Nereus cleared his throat.
Tomorrow evening, he said.
By then, young Jedi, you'll be dead.
I'd like to move sooner,
Thanos said carefully.
The element of surprise will work in favor of the attacking...
Tomorrow evening, Nereus said.
Luke felt Governor Nereus's stare as he and Han strode out of the ops room. Nereus expected never to see him again. Once they passed the first corner, Han muttered, You have got to be kidding, trusting those people. Luke answered out of one side of his mouth, Reconsider Commander Thanos.
Oh?
Han raised one eyebrow, then turned his head aside to stare down the corridor. Good, they both better stay jumpy.
Straightforward,
said Luke. Wants to do a good job and is glad for help. He's not Nereus's man.
Empire's man.
They slowed at the edge of a wide lobby. Luke reached out through the force. No one waited there. Han kept one hand near his blaster as they hurried across. Once they left the Imperial office's corridor, Han frowned.
Is it my imagination, or are you being just a little more careful than yesterday?
I had word from an inside source that Governor Nereus plans to hand me to the Sirukh.
Yeah, said Han. Finally gonna be careful, huh?
I've been careful. Luke clapped his shoulder. All they'd been through had already bonded them like brothers. Now this. Once they reached the apartment, Han disappeared into his room. Luke hastily encoded a message to Wedge Antilles out in the orbital net. Attack coordinated for tomorrow night. Work with Governor Nereus's forces. Follow Thanos' orders, but keep your deflector shields up. Smiling grimly, he sent it. Han and Leia were headed for the Falcon as soon as he located her. She'd gone off alone after breakfast, but with the attack this imminent, it was time to stand ready. Luke would catch the next shuttle to orbit and reboard the flurry. His stomach grumbled a more immediate message. He ought to catch lunch, but not here. The food at the cantina at Pad 12, where the flurry was docked, should be non-toxic. You ready, Han? Han stepped back out.
Leia's not answering.
Well, maybe she and Captison went someplace where the Imperials couldn't listen to them.
Yeah, possible. Let's get you to the troops, then I'm going to look for her.
Prime Minister Captison had suggested a drive, and to Leia's surprise, Senior Senator Orne Belden climbed aboard with a bulging breast pocket. Captison's liveried chauffeur steered a closed cockpit government speeder off the roof port. Belden laid a finger across his lips. Leia nodded, understanding. No talking yet. 5 minutes later, Captison's chauffeur landed the speeder at a small dome surrounded by gaudy repulsor signs that hovered several meters overhead. Leia reached for the entry hatch. Captison laid a hand over hers. Wait, he said softly. 10 minutes after that, Captison's chauffeur and bodyguard took off again in the government speeder, while Leia stepped into the front passenger seat of a small rental craft. Do you do this often? She asked, amused but pleased by their subterfuge.
Never done it before. Captison steered out into traffic. It was Belden's idea. It's safe to assume that the speeder pool's not secured for talking.
The senior senator leaned forward between them and patted his bulging breast pocket.
This will help, too. We are now inaudible.
He told her about the generator. Gentlemen, I'd be intrigued to know why the Empire hasn't pushed Bakura into the Alliance camp.
Well, Nereus has been subtle, I suppose,
guessed Captison,
applying pressure slowly.
Is there an underground, Senator Belden?
Officially, no.
100 members? 10 cells?
close enough.
If you could choose freely and without risk to your people, which side would you wish Bakura to support?
The Alliance,
Captison admitted.
We're displeased with Imperial taxation, with off-world rule, and sending our young men and women into Imperial service. But we are afraid.
Senator Belden, give your people a chance to fight for their freedom, and they'll... Out of long habit, Leia glanced back over her shoulder. A double-potted local patrol craft followed 10 lengths back. Those are Imperials behind us, I think. Captison checked the sensor screen and pushed his throttle forward.
But the Imperials were faster. They brought Leia, Belden, and Captison to Nereus, who ordered them placed under arrest.
Prime Minister Captison, an admitted droid hater, simply has to agree that we serve a useful purpose now. We've been on the job for 7 hours without so much as a break for lubricants.
Threepio leaned his head closer.
Quiet, R2. There's something different on top of this one.
R2's automatic scanners compared the code with millions of others.
Oh, no. R2, you must call Master Luke at once. This is dreadful.
Han had just dropped Luke off at the spaceport cantina to wait for the Flurry shuttle and was heading away in the Falcon when a glimmering face appeared in midair over his head-up city map.
Alert all residents. A curfew has just been imposed. Security forces will shoot to kill leaders and stun their followers to incarcerate them. This follows the arrests of Prime Minister Captison and Senior Senator Orne Belden on suspicion of subversion, along with rebel leader Leia Organa.
Han streaked to a landing on the Bakur complex's roof port, then took the nearest turbo lift down. As usual, two stormtroopers stood guard outside his apartment. Their helmets swiveled as he strode inside past them. They probably didn't mean to let him back out. 3PO stood inside, waiting with infinite mechanical patience.
General Solo, thank goodness you've come. Senator Captison returned me here, but she took R2 to her office. His restraining bolt...
Not now. Find Leia.
But, General, the Siruk are coming for Master Luke, and then attacking immediately.
Han skidded to a halt halfway across the common room.
Wait. Did you say attacking?
Within an hour. We must...
How do you... No, it'll keep... Well, where's Leia?
The droid punched numbers at the console and was soon able to report that Leia had been flown to a small installation in the nearby mountains.
Han drew his blaster and stalked toward the door. Let's go, Goldenrod. We gotta get past two stormtroopers.
Sir, take a minute to plan this once. Minimize your risks.
Han hesitated.
Minimize? How?
Instead of blasting your way out, you might attempt a deception of some sort.
Han had to admit the droid was right. Less than a minute later, he sent the glide door open and stood back. 3PO fled into the lobby, screeching gibberish, waving both arms and swaying violently back and forth. With the stormtroopers distracted by the spectacle, Han shot them. His blaster on stun, out of respect for Leia's wishes, he told himself. Having stolen an Imperial speeder, Han streaked out of the city and dropped low over the western river, keeping low enough to catch fish, and spitting distance from the huge white cliff on his right, hopefully evading surveillance. He waited until the foothills looked tall enough to offer some cover, then he zipped across the river and up a small tributary stream. It didn't take him long to spot his target, an ancient T-shaped log building with a dark green stone roof. Inside, only one door stood closed on the main hallway, with a skinny security droid sitting beside it like an extra doorpost. Obviously, the Imperials didn't bother to humor Bakuran anti-droid sentiments here at their private installation. Han leveled his blaster at the droid's midsection and fired.
Minimum security, Han observed. A little too convenient. If this was another trap...
They'd deal with it. 3PO ought to be back at the Falcon by now.
Leia? He called softly into the darkened suite. It's me.
Lights came on. Hey! Her voice came from above. She stood perched on the seat of a repulsor chair directly over the doorway.
Good thing you spoke up. I almost flattened you.
Cariel stood outside Epi Belden's door and straightened her freshly pruned bundle of cloudberry spikes. Each fragrant blossom could have produced a succulent fruit, but too many spikes on a vine made the fruit tiny and sour. The symbolism, some blossoms, some lives, cut off to allow a few to grow stronger, gave her small comfort. Would Epi understand that her husband for over a century had died in Governor Nereus's custody? Or would he return again and again in her perception, like Ravadan? In Orne Belden's office, a work screen silhouetted a small, hunched figure.
Epi?
The figure turned around. Epi Belden's wrinkled face glowed with the intensity of a small bird's.
You know anyone else who's likely to be here?
She's been like that all morning.
Cliss, Epi's caretaker, stood at the door.
Go on in. She's been asking for you.
And for that young man...
Epi paddled her repulsor chair away from the work screen.
Who was he?
He's a rebel, but a dangerous one. A Jedi. One of them.
Oh-ho!
Epi's feet swung under her chair.
Our teachers have taught us a lot of wisdom down the years, but also a load of guff.
Epi, you're well.
You're here to tell me about Orne, aren't you?
The wall of her preoccupation thinned, and Gary glimpsed her fresh grief. Full realization hadn't set in. Epi was working while she could, the better to grieve later.
Thank you anyway, love. I heard. No one else thought to notify me, but I've been plugged in all morning. Let the Imperials call it a cerebral hemorrhage, but I know he died for Bakura.
She spun her repulsor chair and touched the workstation control. A screen full of symbols translated itself into a news media picture.
Fires and strikes and running street battles in Salisdar. Oh, I wish I were 80 again.
Epi, what did you do?
Only what that young man... excuse me, that terribly dangerous young Jedi showed me to do.
Gary reached out a hand.
You're going to wear yourself out. Shouldn't you lie down for a bit?
Epi shook her head.
I've missed years. Can't waste minutes now. Bakura's rising. I want to be in on it.
Gariel steadied herself.
Rising?
Against Nereus, of course.
But we need Governor Nereus and his forces. We're going to be invaded any minute. If we fight each other now, the Siruk will have us piecemeal.
That's why it can't be done wrong. Those people on the streets are only the distraction. You and I and a few others on the inside will run the real rebellion. We could accomplish plenty before the aliens actually attacked.
Gary gaped at the thought. How could you even consider collaborating with Epi and the rebels? The alliance was impractical, naively idealistic. But she loved Bakura, not the Empire. I'm with you, she said softly. Gariel flew her air car back to the complex, dodging security patrols, and ran to her office. The rebel's droid, R2-D2, stood right where she'd left it, beside her desk, spinning its dome and beeping unintelligibly. Now that she could think of trying to free Uncle Yorg, she realized that she knew only one person who could possibly help. She bent close to the droid. She felt ludicrous talking to it.
R2-D2, can you help me locate Commander Skywalker?
Luke glanced one last time at the spaceport cantina's cracked chrono. In 5 minutes, if his shuttle hadn't arrived, he'd join Chewie on the Falcon. Quick footsteps approached along the wall outside. Alarmed, he reached out through the Force, so he felt Gariel before the main door swung open. She hurried through, followed by R2. She explained what had happened and begged his help.
Let's have R2 try to find your uncle. Can you interface the governmental mainframe from a public comnet?
I should be able to. Luke suddenly motioned for silence. A vague sense of aggression arose in the kitchens. Almost instantly, it resolved into three distinctly alien presences, and one that mystified him, human but alien-scented. He drew his blaster and flipped the grip toward Gary. Can you shoot? There are Saruk in the building. I'm sorry I can't help your uncle now. She closed her hand around the blaster uncertainly. Have R2 get word to the flurry up in orbit and tell them what's happening. Then find your uncle. Get out of here. Now. The front and side doors blew open simultaneously. The muzzle of a heavy blaster rifle appeared through each one, then a white-armored stormtrooper. This time Luke guessed they weren't on his side. He seized Gariel's shoulders and swept her behind him. The handful of Bakurin customers dove under tables. Three Saruk pushed through the kitchen door, large, smooth-scaled creatures with long, muscular tails to balance massive upper bodies. Two of different sizes were glossy brown, one intense blue. The heads looked bird-like with huge, toothy beaks and all-black eyes. Each wore a shoulder bag slung across its body under one forelimb. They towered over the frightened service staff. A human in striped robes stepped around the counter after the aliens. "Fortunate one," he hailed Luke. "You are the Jedi, Skywalker. I will translate for you." Luke recognized Deb Siwara from the hologram recording. He focused deep into the Force, drawing on all Yoda had taught him. He was at peace. He was peace. You are to be the guest of Admiral Ifpicus, as you begin a new kind of life you have only dreamed of before. Give my companions your weapon, and come gladly with me. Luke recognized him a second time. This boy had also sent the dream warning. Thank you for your invitation. I would rather stay here. Ask your masters to sit down. We will talk. They do not sit, my friend. We would be honored to accept your companion, too, as our guest, but you must hurry. Gary's cheeks whitened as the blue alien stumped forward, but she held her ground. It reached a clawed forelimb toward her shoulder. Something black slithered out of its nostrils. She gasped and brought up Luke's blaster. Get away from her! The alien's head turned and the nose tongues flicked toward him. The eye seemed to swirl like a dark storm, sucking at his will. Unquestionably, this one or another like him kept Dev Siwara leashed. R2 rocked back and forth, chirping electronic fury. Luke wondered what he was telling the Saruk. Luke called to the troopers, "You have no business with this woman. It's me they want. Let her leave."
"The Flutis want her," answered a trooper. "This time the Flutis get what they want."
Luke ignited his lightsaber and got a solid two-handed fighting grip.
"Not necessarily."
Four blast rifles leveled at him, black holes framed by white helmets. Luke crouched and turned his body sideways, presenting a smaller target. Gary dropped prone. The troopers opened fire. Luke stretched deep into the Force. He felt his body whirl and his saber leap and vaguely sensed energy bolts splashing on gritty cantina walls. He eased closer, dodging tables toward a point between his attackers. Suddenly, the blast stopped coming as the Imperials realized they were sighting past Luke at each other. He stretched out with the Force, touched two hostile minds, and leapt. Blue-white stun bolts crackled through the air beneath him. Troopers dropped on both sides. Luke spun back toward the aliens. He coughed, then caught his breath.
"R2!"
he shouted.
"Get her out of here! Get help!"
R2 rolled toward Gariel. She lurched up to her hands and knees and edged toward the front door. Luke stepped sideways.
"Dev, warn them I can't stun them with a lightsaber. I'll have to kill them if they come at me."
"You mustn't. If they die here away from a consecrated world, it is eternal tragedy."
The aliens sighted on him. Gary had crawled closer to the door, but not close enough. They'd get her unless he attacked first. The aliens carried paddles, which one now raised. A thin silver beam shot out of its narrow point. Confidently, Luke stepped toward the beam and swung his saber into it. It didn't deflect. It only bent slightly. Before he could react, the beam swept through him. It left his midsection tingling. Relieved that it didn't do worse, he adjusted his grip on the lightsaber. The second alien moved out from behind the first and added his beam, aiming low, shooting for his legs. He pivoted aside. One beam snapped off, the other tracked him, closing. Big Blue stepped to one side and projected a beam down the room's central aisle, cutting Luke's space in half.
No!
Gary shot at the blue alien but missed. The alien trained its beamer at her. Silver light illumined the hollow of her throat. She gave a little cry, crumpled, and lay still. Luke charged the small V-crested brown alien and swung his saber at its mysterious weapon. The alien lost a foreclaw with his paddle beamer. Fluting wildly, he spun away from Luke.
Don't!
Dev wrung his hands.
Don't harm them!
The larger brown stomped toward him, muscular legs pumping like pistons. Luke flung the saber in a long spinning arc. The big brown Saroop fell headless as the saber spun back into Luke's hand.
Stop!
Weeping, Dev dashed toward the fallen alien. Big Blue projected his beam through Luke again, or rather where Luke had been. Luke somersaulted over the beam, thrust out a hand, and tried to wrest the weapon away. That pulled the Saruk's forelimb toward him. The beam focused at the top of Luke's right leg. It collapsed, nerveless. Staggering, Luke tried to jump backward. He struggled to balance, to regain full control of the force. The weapon scrambled nerve centers then. Gary was probably unconscious.
R2, drag her out of here!
R2 reached Gary, seized her by her belt, and dragged her toward the front door. Luke hopped crookedly onto the nearest orange tabletop. His numb right leg twisted as his full weight landed on it. He had to use the force to stay upright. R2's shrill whistle spun Luke around. Dev aimed an Imperial blaster upward at his body, a classic stun shot. Luke loosened one hand from his saber and force-yanked the blaster from Dev's hand. It sailed to him with slow grace. Easily, he spun and sliced. Two halves of the weapon clattered onto the table. Now, urged his inner sense. He reached deep into the force and felt for the hypnotic control that twisted Dev Sibwara to the alien's will. The shadow of something enormous darkened most of Dev's memories. The boy had tremendous strength in the force, though.
Tell the Jedi to hurry along with us. Promise anything.
Realization flashed through Dev. The Saruk meant to reduce humankind to breeding animals and energy sources. They would lie, kill, torture, and maim to achieve domination. They deserved nothing but hatred. Luke Skywalker called down from the tabletop. Hate is the dark side. Don't give in to it.
What?
Asked Master Fear Wurung.
What is she saying to you?
Confused, Dev answered automatically.
He apologized for killing one of our kind, Master.
Tell him to precede us outside. He must hurry.
The sound of the siren evoked Dev's memory of the most terrible moment of his childhood. A civil defense scramble alarm. Invasion underway. Had Admiral Iphpicus attacked the orbiting ships after all? One more link in their twisted chain of lies. Caught up in his own thoughts, Dev almost missed seeing the swift sweep of Bluescale's tail. Struck on the head, the Jedi collapsed. His lightsaber flew loose, sliced through the table, and fell onto the floor where it lay hiss-humming.
A life with you is never dull. Seated behind Han on the speeder, Leia stroked his scratchy chin. He managed to smile.
Ah, couldn't have that.
The speeder's roar seemed to change.
No, it was another one.
We've got company over there.
They were surrounded.
So it was a trap. They can shoot us down and get rid of us for good.
Escaping arrest, Leia agreed.
Hang on.
Han spun the speeder in a tight arc back up into the foothills. Two more Imperial craft appeared in front of them. Han pulled back on altitude control, climbing and turning simultaneously. Leia's stomach swooped up through her midsection as he flipped the speeder through the top of the arc.
Now, good, they've got hot military models.
Something bright and noisy, a streak of laser cannon energy, passed beside them on the starboard side.
Han, reinforcements!
A pair of tiny X-winged silhouettes dropped out of the cloudy blue sky. X-wing military fighters had twice the speed and firepower of those land-based speeders. Sure enough, the Imperial scattered. Han steered down the drainage canal toward the wide river. An X-wing swept into position at his 3 o'clock, and the other came in at 9 o'clock high. Leia waved. Inside the slanting cockpit, a black glove waved back. Where the river curved southeast, just north of Salistar, both fighters soared again toward space. They don't want to be seen this close to the city. It would alarm the Bakurans.
Glad somebody's thinking.
Shh.
Shreds of dusty smoke covered the spaceport from hundreds of blast-offs. Han steered down into the murk and landed practically on top of the Falcon. It was guarded by the Wookiee. Leia dashed up the ramp behind Chewbacca. "I hope it's fueled," she exclaimed as she dropped into her high-backed seat.
"Topped up and ready for a trip to the core,"
Han translated as he hobbled into the cockpit.
"Leia, strap down."
The Imperial medic frowned, pressed Gary's head back with inexorable professional gentleness, and re-examined the faint burn across the hollow of her throat.
"Some kind of nervous system ionization, I suppose. That's what I'll put on the report."
She coughed.
May I go now?"
"I'm sorry, we've been asked to keep you here a little longer under observation."
What's going on? I heard a siren."
"They've struck at the orbital station."
Then it had begun. They'd taken Luke. She couldn't imagine even a Jedi with enough power to single-handedly resist whatever they hoped to do with him. The medic slipped out, and shortly thereafter a trooper came to the door.
"Come,"
he ordered. Gary had always managed to avoid Governor Nereus's private office. She'd heard disturbing rumors. And then there were Nereus's subtle attentions. The Bakuran governor sat at a desk with a polished off-white surface. He silently motioned her to a chair and watched the trooper leave. A framed tri-D on the nearest wall caught her attention first. A huge, snarling carnivore. Its four long white fangs looked eerily substantial.
"The Ketron," said Nereus. "About Lelish 3.
"The teeth, are they real?"
"Yes. Look around you."